You are listening to Legion of Substitute Podcasters, episode 338, Rediscovering Legion Easter Eggs. Episode 338 of Legion of Substitute Podcasters. I'm Paul French, and today I am taking a break, kid. Yeah, we're just taking a little Easter break, and thought we would represent an old episode, and we're thinking interview, and then further was thinking how much I've been enjoying watching the new iZombie show lately. And one of the really cool things about the iZombie show comes right at the beginning, as you see the Mike Allred created opening credit sequence, which is just amazing, and it's just so cool to see Mike Allred artwork on TV. One of the other cool things about that is although it is completely different from the book iZombie, it's still a lot of fun. And it reminded me of when we talked to Chris Robertson a few years ago, back in episode 148, so this goes back about 4 years, to August of 2011, and so we had a neat talk with him about some of the influences on iZombie, and one of the things was a Legion reference that he had in that book. So there's kind of a tangential Legion connection to the iZombie TV show, if you want to look at it that way. There's a little Easter egg right there. But we also, our original reason for talking to him was they had, at that point, just announced the Legion of Superheroes Star Trek series. So that was kind of our way into talking to him, but he had all kinds of other things to tell us about, and so thought we would represent that interview. Especially interesting when you consider the way things sort of went after this, with him in kind of a high-profile way leaving DC Comics, and indeed kind of leaving the mainstream, the big two comics altogether, and ended up starting up Monkey Brain Comics, which, if you guys haven't been checking out, there's some really cool stuff in there. And again, you want to talk Legion influences, there's some stuff there. So here it is, our interview with Chris Robertson. Hope you enjoy it. Hope you had a safe, happy Easter or a wonderful Passover, whatever it is that you celebrate around this time of year. I hope you've enjoyed it, and we will catch you all next week.
And welcome to episode 148 of Legion of Substitute Podcasters. I'm Paul French, and today I am Family Portrait Lad. We did more than just our family. It was also my in-laws and their three kids, and it was madness. And
I thought you were going to say you started photobombing other people's families.
That'd have been much easier.
That would have been way funnier.
Exactly. No, it was just chasing around and trying to get four kids under the age of six to smile all at once.
Ugh. Wow.
Yeah. Boy, did I need a drink after that one. So that's me this week.
That's you this week?
Yeah.
Wonderful. I am Darren Noel, and I am Hellboy this week, not to be confused with Mike Mignola's Hellboy.
It's because of that giant hand?
Yes, because of the giant hand.
The overworked hand?
Yes, because...
I thought it was just busy. Because you like pancakes.
Oh.
No flapping of the jacks here, sorry.
Oh, my.
No.
And that's all you need to know about my week. There you go.
Oh, indeed. Oh, I'm Matt Kramer, and this week I will be convention kid because Thursday through Saturday for sure I'll be at the Chicago Comic Con, and it's shaping up to be a really fun show. Cool. So, yeah, I'm more.
Who
more
are you, Ed McMahon?
Yes, I'm really more excited to see Billy Corgan than I probably should be.
I'm sure he's just as excited to see you.
Yes. But now I just have to find
when is he coming on the show?
I don't know.
Work that. Come on.
Next episode.
I bet you Billy Corgan fucking loves the Legion. Oops, sorry.
We didn't make it that long this week.
That's because I'm back.
Happy Monday.
Not even 3 minutes in. Impressive, sir.
Oops. Still, Billy Corgan, hook it up. Let's go. Oh, it's me.
Yeah. Okay, we're a week time. Off, and look what happened.
He's in fine form.
He must have upped his medication at the home.
And I am Scott Coles. And tonight, I am Buttershot Boy. I apologize.
That should make it all clear right there.
If it doesn't, it will become clear eventually.
Indeed, indeed.
Just got off a hell week working every day this week, including today. And I don't have to go in tomorrow until 3 in the afternoon. So, ooh, time to unwind, kids.
Indeed. Nice.
It is nice. Sounds like a plan.
Well, that's the only plan I have, so hopefully it works out.
Here, here.
If here. Not, well, we had a good run with Chris Roberson enjoying us. And, well, maybe not. I don't know. I suppose that's pretty presumptuous of me.
We haven't
he
even called him.
He didn't hate us before tonight, so we'll see.
Exactly. Up to now, he's had no reason to loathe us.
That's true. Oh, but wait.
Any minute now.
I think we've got to mention something right off that we've been forgetting to mention the past couple weeks. We're making poor Murray pull his hair out. With the Ditko book.
Oh, you went and mentioned it.
Oh, that.
We had a blood oath not to mention that.
Yeah, we were totally skipping that for a reason. I thought you were talking about the other thing.
Murray's on vacation, so he's not going to hear this.
Oh. Genius.
I think he's back now.
Is he?
That's what Facebook says.
I mean, it's only got Dr. Mayavale in it. Come on.
Ew.
See,
there goes their explicit tag.
You can't say Doc Mayavale on TV. What's wrong with you?
It's one of the words.
Two of them are Dr. Mayavale.
Indeed. There was one of the chapters of the Reflecto Saga, but it's like going to be completely out of context. So that.
Well, so is the Reflecto Saga.
Oh, no, you did not.
Send your hate mail to Matt Kramer at...
It'll just be Murray and I.
And you've already got your email.
Wait, so. I've already started writing it. Dear Matt.
You sir. Bastard.
How dare you? Oh, no.
Those just a poor rent Ultra Boy there. I said it.
Oh, snap.
There you go,
He's
Josh.
He's way smarter than
Ultra
Boy.
For the team, you have slow beaks.
That's about as easy as we've gone on him all week. See, we can treat Josh just like a West Virginia cousin?
Yeah.
Oh, my.
Wait, that involves sex, doesn't it?
That's what we were accused of the other day, you know.
Oh, who was?
We were accused that we treat other people like a West Virginia cousin, but Josh gets a pass. I would say that Josh didn't get a pass because Josh got me going full retard the other week. So
that was really good. I was so proud of you.
If you're referring to our West Virginia cousin, Kyle, then yes.
How could he say that? Hey, speaking of which, Caleb started a podcast this week along with our good friend and
Computo Nemesis
Chris Mosby.
Our good friend and Nemesis.
Oh, so they're never going to publish their podcast then? Because
No, it's one's already up. They got to it quickly. So you can go to talesfromthelongbox.com, and I'm only about halfway through, but I really enjoyed it, and it's always neat to hear a new show. And,
I think it's missing something though, I'm not sure what.
Scott Coles, that's what it's missing. It's missing.
That's
Scott Coles.
That could be it.
It's missing Scott's particular brand of
offensive humor.
And not knowing what book they're talking about.
Oh, there's that.
And I'm hitting so trees. Awesome at
that. There is no one better at that than you, sir.
That's true.
And yes, about? So so it came out on the 2nd of August, so this past Tuesday, and it is Tales from the Long Box podcast and episode 0, Secret Origin. And I'll just go through their little brief on it. And so,
spoiler alert!
Indeed, indeed.
That read comics.
Welcome to the Tales of Longbox podcast. Join me, actually, Chris Mosby, and Caleb Gerard on this journey of fun and adventure. Do you currently read comic books and are looking for something different to read? Have you ever thought about reading comic books and had no idea where to start?
No.
Did you used to read comics but stopped for some reason?
No.
Do you want to get your kids reading something and need some ideas? Have you seen the latest superhero movie and are begging for more?
No.
Okay. Well, if you answered yes to any of those questions, then this is the podcast for you. Comic books are more accessible than they have ever been before. The digital age of comics has begun, so let us be your guide to one of the greatest forms of entertainment ever devised and find out what you've been missing. And despite the peanut gallery, Well, hey, you know, you've heard Chris on here. You've heard us talk about Caleb, and they're good guys. They're good guys. And poor Caleb. This is the plug he gets. He may have won. Indeed. What?
Dr. Mayavale. What? You said Dr. Mayavale. Take a drink.
I think you said.
Wow, that's a new rule. Just kind of slipped in there. That's nice. Anyway, so check it out. Like I said, I quite enjoyed what I've heard so far, and they get in all kinds of stuff, and they link to us, so it's a beautiful thing.
So. Indeed,
that's the important part.
Exactly. Yes, that's what it's all about. and it's proof. I say that Chris can be on a podcast and not crash the website because their website's still up.
I thought you were going to say it's proof that it's anybody early. Can do a podcast.
I wouldn't say that because that'd be rude. I mean, we're proof of that.
That's true.
I mean, come on, seriously. So, Legion news for this week? Not really anything.
Yeah, quiet.
We did get a new issue of Adventure, and we'll go over that after. You know, we're not going to go over that this week because we got other stuff. We got other fish to fry, as it were. But that's one Legion book down. One more to go.
That's the last issue. That's right.
That's the last issue of Adventure.
And it was a good issue.
Yeah, it was. It was quite good. The last issue of Adventure until they start up Adventure again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because you know they will eventually, right?
Right. Pretty much. So Adventure will have had many number ones.
Yes.
So, but yeah, other than that, I mean, Legion news, a little bit in the forthcoming stages. We're still waiting on some stuff. But one of the things that we'd mentioned the other week was, of course, that Chris Robertson is going to be doing a Star Trek and Legion crossover.
Woohoo!
Exactly. I put in my order for it yesterday.
I'm quite looking forward to this. And so we're going to actually have a little talk about Legion stuff, Star Trek stuff, and just all kinds of stuff, because I tell you, Chris is a busy dude. And he got to, well, maybe not the final wink, because I don't know how Cornell is going to finish off his action story. But, you know, we got the final wink in Superman. For this version of the character, so
so he that can tell is us. Sweet.
Along with Jamal,
exactly, and so we can talk to him a little bit about that. So we will bring him on in just a moment. And now joining us on the line, we have Chris Robertson. Chris, how are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Is it Robertson or Roberson?
Well, it's Robertson, but I answer to anything.
Nice. It makes it easier. Hey, George. Yes?
Yep, pretty much.
Fritz Huberson, about your new book. I just dropped my mouse. Sorry.
Oh, all right, then. So, Chris, we were just talking about how busy you are right now.
I don't feel that busy.
Yeah.
He's got time to talk to us.
I only do interviews at night because I don't count them as work because I get to my rule is I get to have a couple of cocktails when I do an interview. So
it's, I love
us too.
twist my arm.
We're gonna get along just fine.
So it's no burden to sit and talk on Skype with a tasty cocktail.
What are you drinking tonight, Chris?
My drink of choice is the Caipirinha. I mispronounced it. It's the Caipirinha, if you speak Ooh. Portuguese. It's what the national that? Cocktail of Brazil.
Nice. What's in, it? What's in that?
It's sugarcane rum, lime, sugar, and ice.
Oh,
it's nature's love. Perfect cocktail.
Wow, he's doing that upright.
Yeah, he is.
We got to step up our game, guys. I mean,
I'm a professional.
I'm drinking water shots out of the bottle, so.
I don't mess around.
Exactly. Well, you know, when it would, we were just talking about, you've got the, of course, the Legion and Star Trek crossover, and we're going to get much more in depth on many of these things. Mm-hmm. You've got that coming up. You just wrapped up a run on Superman. And,
yes.
And in fact, got to give the final wink in the Superman comic.
I did.
This. And
for the moment, yeah.
Yes, well, this is true, but you know, it's only been done once before.
Well, so, you know, it, Superman used to wink all the time.
True.
You know,
well, then we got sexual harassment laws. So
exactly,
he's more than happy. You can't wink at anybody. Yeah,
but I did do that. Yes,
exactly, and of course, you've just finished up. A second Cinderella series in the Fables universe.
Uh-huh.
And upcoming, if what I hear is correct, you're going to have an arc coming up it's not The Fairest, it's just Fairest. Is that correct?
Yes, just Fairest.
Yes. I think there was a big point made about that in the San Diego panel. So
Bill's very pedantic about that kind of thing. There's no definite article. It's just Fairest.
Indeed. So a lot of stuff going on, and we really want to cover a lot of that. But we should start off with, because we know that you're a big Legion fan. In fact, when the Star Trek and Legion crossover was first announced, you said that you thought it was a prank, because ever since when you were 9 years old, that's what it was for you, was Star Trek and the Legion.
Yep.
How did you first get into the Legion?
My point of entry, I was born in 1970, and so I'd seen the comics on, you know, drugstore newsstands, but my real point of entry was, and I've got it on the shelf right here, it was the DC Blue Ribbon Digest came out.
Yes.
Came out at the beginning of 1979. I think it's cover dated late 78. But number one, DC Special Blue Ribbon Digest. And I have not read the cover off yet. But it's very floppy, this thing, because I just read it over and over and over again. And of course, on the back, that, you know, they had these compiled by Enos Nelson Bridwell list of who all the current Legionnaires were,
right,
as of December 1979. So I guess it was like January of 80 it came out.
Yeah.
And so then I became a little more aware of what was going on the shelves, and started picking up some of the older stuff and reading a bunch of the digests. And then I was missing the current series, though. Like, I wasn't paying attention to the new stuff. I was reading all these reprints of the old, you know, auto binder stuff from the from the 60s. And then one Christmas, one of my uncles gave me a big stack of comics, which they basically just gone and bought everything off the rack.
Wow.
Nice. And in there was the Legion of Superheroes issue. It's like two issues past the end of the Great Darkness Saga.
Yeah.
Mm.
And it's the angry Cosmic Boy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I love that one.
And I just
constipated Cosmic Boy. So.
Yeah. No, he was just angry. He was upset. He had reason to be upset. They firebombed his brother's house.
Uh-huh.
And then I just became obsessed. And I went. I spent years scouring back issue bins until I dissembled a not a complete run of the adventure run, but pretty close.
Yeah.
And yeah, then I was just hardcore.
How cool was that? I mean, you know, we're pretty much the same age, and it's those Blue Ribbon Digests were, they were an invaluable, you know, gateway to that Silver Age world.
I think so. I mean, I think I knew definitely by the time I was 10, summer of 1980, I knew more about Silver Age DC than I knew about what DC was doing right then.
Oh, definitely. Wow. Definitely. Yeah, no, I found that. It was because they were coming out pretty much monthly, and you would get a whole bunch of comic stories in them. So even if you were picking up regular stuff off the newsstand, you were still getting a steadier diet of Silver Age.
Yeah.
At that time. And it's, and you know, I still, whenever I see them in a comic shop, I grab them up. Mm. And I recently picked up the one that's all Superboy's friends in Smallville. And so it's got that first Pete Ross story and all that kind of thing. And, and I think to myself, I thought to myself, it's like, you know, I didn't think that reprints were as common when I was younger, but it was all in those digests.
Yeah. Between the digest and the...
And the 100 pages.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, and then you had the treasury editions, the big tabloid size
collection.
Oh, yeah.
And you could just get those in a grocery store. You know, I think it was more than monthly. I think that it was almost like weekly or biweekly for a while, because once they started reprinting Adventure, you know, they were doing, what, two Legion stories?
Yeah, that's right. A
collection
that's right.
Every month. It was crazy.
And they were doing it all chronologically, and you had the annotations in the back there as well. And you're right, because there were three or four. There was like the Blue Ribbon Digest, then there was there were three or four different digest series that they had. And then Adventure got added to that. And so I mean, as we say, it was a pretty steady diet of Silver Age stuff, and it was And that's probably I credit that for why I have such an affinity for that era, you know. And it's really interesting stuff.
It was years before I feel like the like Levitz's first run, on Legion, was something I didn't really know that much about, like with the Earth War stuff and all that business. Was much later before I went back and read that stuff, because I knew everything up to it not being Superboy and the Legion of Superheroes anymore. And knew Great Darkness Saga on, but I had this big gap in the middle that took me years to fill in.
Very cool.
But I did. I was dedicated.
Indeed. So, let's kick that right into the Star Trek and Legion of Superheroes, because you've mentioned that kicks in sort of right after that, right around that. That era of Legion, where you first started getting into the issues of it,
and there's no accident there. They when they approached me, as I said, I thought it was a prank. Honestly, for north of a month, I thought someone was messing with me. Because it was just it's cartoonishly aimed at me, and so by email I was being very professional and like working up proposals and like doing this back and forth. And the whole time I was calling everyone I knew that.
Waiting for the shoe to drop.
No, waiting for Ashton Kutcher to come to your front door.
Well, I just wanted to let them know that, like, if this is you, I'm not falling for it. You know, I'm not. but you don't win. But their only caveats were that it needed to be classic Trek and some era of what they configured as classic Legion. So I guess up till. You know, the right before the 5 years later run.
Yeah.
And so, of course, I picked basically the issue where I started reading. I said, how about right after the Greg Tardis saga? And they were like, yeah, that's great. And I mean, realistically, I felt like that era was one of the more recognizable ones in terms of the configuration of the team.
Mm-hmm.
Also, their uniforms made, like their costumes would kind of make sense up against Star Trek people. Like the way that...
That's true,
Were not outrageous. They were just kind of future clothes. They weren't outrageously superhero-y. And you wouldn't have things like...
bikinis.
Exactly. And so when Phil Jimenez signed on to the covers, his first question was, would he get to do Cosmic Boy in the bustier?
Oh, I love Phil.
Thank you, Phil. But you know, as tossing him a bone, he is wearing pink. I mean, so it's not,
pale scarlet.
I felt really bad. But no, that's why it is where it is, because that's the moment that I have the most emotional attachment to.
Nice.
Nice.
And of course, it works out that the Great Darkness Saga just came out in hardcover.
Well, it makes it much easier to do my research. I've got all in one place.
Absolutely. And you've said in the past that you're hardcore into the research side of things.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Like this is a big thing for you when you're writing. So what has that involved? You know, like you say, you look obviously reading through the Great Darkness. What is it involved on the Trek side?
Because I'm such a fanatic for both things, it really didn't require a whole lot of research. Uh-huh. I mean, I pulled off the shelf all my Star Trek technical manuals and, you know, the compendiums and companions, mm-hmm. And, you know, pulled, you know, Legion collections and whatnot. But really, that's all in my head. So I used it as an excuse to watch a couple of episodes of Trek and sit down and read a few years worth of Legion. But I knew all that stuff anyway. I really didn't have to do it.
That's right. But you can say to your wife, I got to
research.
Work. I'm working.
Well, the thing about it is like now this justifies 33 years of obsession.
so it's all culminating towards this one moment, this one event. It's beautiful. Destiny, honey. You can't fight it.
Right. Well, she knew what she was getting into. Like she knew who I was when she married me. So
there you go. There you go. Now you, of course, this isn't technically the first time you've written the Legion, because of course, and now speaking of the, would have thought this was a prank, because when we first announced this on the show a few weeks back, one of our listeners, Matthew Elmsley from the Legion Abstract, pointed out to us that in the novel Here, There, and Everywhere, yeah. you already had referenced some characters who seemed suspiciously. How does he put it? Believe he said. April 2005, publication of Chris Robertson's novel Here, There, and Everywhere, a time travel novel containing a cameo appearance by three futuristic teenagers bearing a striking resemblance to Lightning Lad, Cosmic Boy, and Saturn Girl.
There is a passing blushing resemblance, yes. I move the letters around a little bit.
Oh, okay, okay. Because I remember in one recent interview, you said that you had already included them technically, but you figured maybe it was a little too subtle.
But more people have noticed now. When it first came out, it turns out that the serious readers of science fiction novels are not that up to speed on. DC superheroics,
right.
So yeah, it sailed right over most of their heads. It was one of many cameos to the book. You know, like Doctor Who is in there. Mm-hmm. There's a bunch of others.
What?
But that one, well, it's not really Doctor Who, but it's a thing that looks like Doctor Who.
He's the Doctor, sir.
I know.
Call him Doctor Who. A kitten dies.
I know. I get called out on this
every
a lot.
Every time.
But if you just say the Doctor, and you're particularly if you're talking about Star Trek,
exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You have to say who. It's just, you know.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Michael. Yeah.
so I mean, and I'm thinking to myself, okay, so the Legion is in a book called Here, There, and Everywhere, and I'm thinking that title has got to be something more to that. So I look into this, and being a huge Beatles fan, and for me, you know, it's like time travel. Alternate timelines, my favorite kind of story. And so I'm like, the Beatles are in this, the Legion's in this, and it's a time travel alternate reality story. Like, did he reach in my brain and figure out exactly what book I needed to read?
It's cartoonishly like his ideal book.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Well, clearly you just have good taste. Star Trek is yours.
So my copy arrives on Monday, actually. Yes.
And, well, I hope it doesn't disappoint. The Beatles are really only in there for a chapter, but then I rip off their song titles for the chapter.
So. Works for me.
Well, I read the excerpt on your website, and that is, for those who aren't aware, that is at chrisrobertson.net. Yep. And so I read the excerpt there, and that's when I was like, yeah, I just got to find this. Yeah. I got to read the rest of this.
I was the same way. My copy arrives, I think, Tuesday.
So there you go.
Awesome. That's probably more sales than that book's had in a while.
Well, we're going to see if we can push it up a little for you, sir. So, so also recently with the whole Superman thing, how did we're kind of working backwards here because we want to get into sort of how you started into all this. But
okay.
But let's talk Superman because that just happened this week for us. For you, it happened a while back, you know, when you sent the script off to Jamal. But when you so maybe start with where they called you up and said, hey, we want you to continue on with this story.
Well, the short version is that I'd always assumed I would never get to work with DC characters. Mm-hmm. And because I tried for several years and wasn't able to get any traction. And I just resigned myself to it. Mm-hmm. And then I think it was August, September, they called me up, or they emailed me rather, and asked if I'd be interested in doing a one or two issue fill-in on Superman Batman.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I said,
yeah.
I said, yeah. and then I think almost immediately I asked, could I use the DC 1 million version of the character?
Exactly.
Ooh, yeah.
And they said, sure, but can you also work in, you know, our guys? And I'm like, yeah, okay, but
if I have to.
I immediately decided I would go with the Bronze Age, you know, kind of 1979 version of those characters. Well, it's really 1981, to be technical.
Mm-hmm. I'm sensing a theme here.
Yeah, well, you know, the thing is, if I get to play with these toys just once, I'm going to do the story that I would have wanted to read when I was the age I was most obsessed with it.
Awesome. That's fantastic.
And so they went for it, and there's actually Legion stuff a little bit in, kind of sideways Legion stuff in Superman Batman, because while I was working on the second half of it, I realized, well, this will probably be the only chance I'll ever get to do this. So I'm going to put in all these different pairings, different versions of the World Finest through history that I think would be cool to tell stories about. Mm-hmm. And one of them is, it's Laurel Kent and her sidekick.
She without pants, yes.
Yes, well virtually without clothes.
Yes, yes.
She has a cape. and her, you know, so she's Superwoman. Her sidekick is Superman, Kent Shakespeare. And they're teamed up with Brain Taylor and his sidekick in the 31st century. And so I sent the thing in, and they were fine with virtually everything except they couldn't abide Laurel Kent because she was dead. And I was like, Laurel Kent was... But, okay, so three reboots ago, Laurel Kent was revealed to be an android.
Oh, it was a dark day. Very
forgettable story. Well, let's just pretend she was replaced by an android who died, and then eventually they, you know, the real Laurel can escape from whatever prison she was in. But they wouldn't go for it, so I just called her Elna Kent, and it went right by. Because, you know, I knew the DC Comics better than they did. But yeah, so basically as soon as I'm turning in the second issue of that, they said, hey, do you want to write Superman for 8 months? And I said, yeah, you know. And they said, well, you have to write this, you know, kind of questionable storyline. I was like, thank you. That's not what they said.
Okay, I was going to say.
That's kind of what they said.
I like it better.
Yeah, they kind of said that. But I was like, you know, I don't care. I can do something cool. You know, ultimately only 7 of my 8 issues would see print. But I got to do that, and it was fun.
Yeah. Hopefully sometime in the future we can see the Crisis in Infinite Eras.
Yeah. You know, my first pitch on the Star Trek Legion was to make it the Crisis in Infinite Eras.
Oh, wow.
Oh, really?
And it was going to be it was this crazy war between the Infinite Man on one side and I can't remember who it was on the other side. One of the Star Trek, it wasn't the Organians, but it was one of the, you know, highly evolved energy being types. And DC was like, you know, we really don't know who the Infinite Man is. This isn't a big enough threat.
Oh, man.
What? Like, it's the Infinite Man.
DC doesn't know who their own characters are.
Well, not they didn't know who he was, but they felt that he was a minor character. So gotcha.
They wanted to use, like, the Anti-Monitor or something.
They did, however, in that draft, point out to me that Universo was not a time-traveling villain.
yet. Which
I took. Well, he was when he first appeared. He was when he turned. You know, and his son is Ron Vidar, for God's sake. So
he invented time machines. I mean,
yeah. So
is it that hard to grasp that he might have stolen one of his kids' Tinker toys and?
So every once in a while, I go totally pedantic. So that was one of the instances where I got one line note, and I sent back. It was like a 10-line paragraph citing continuity, where we're in fact completely wrong. But then I was like, that's okay, I'll do something else.
Yeah. So, you know, I, and again, reaching into my brain, Kent Shakespeare, seriously. Oh, man, that's awesome.
I love that guy.
Oh, it's a beautiful thing.
What's not to like? He has those funky glasses.
Yeah. And he's...
And a cool costume.
And he's Rob Petrie's kid.
He had a costume?
he had the Starfield costume with Star.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, went back when he was called Impulse.
Well, you see it. There's one flashback to the gap, where you get to see it. I think was it Sunboy. I think maybe is remembering the years.
Oh yeah.
But he does wear it under his kind of gray jumpsuit.
Yes. Yeah, that's what I always remember as the jumpsuit. I'm like, I didn't remember him having a costume at all.
But he's wearing his Starfield T-shirt underneath the jumpsuit.
Oh yeah. Okay. I always like dudes that just run around doing superhero stuff in like regular clothes.
Yeah, and then he went to like work at a children's hospital.
Yeah.
You know? That's just a cool guy.
Yeah,
exactly. Well, he was guarding Lightning Lad and Saturn Girl's kid, really, so.
That too.
Yeah. Yeah, but he was doing the good work. He was doing the good work, so.
Totally he was.
So now, how much latitude did you have in working on this story? Now, because they made a big point about how you were going to be working from the notes from JMS. How did that process work? Did you collaborate with him, or did you just have his notes and have to work from those, or?
Basically, no to both of those. I never had any contact with JMS either directly or indirectly. They gave me a one page, kind of bulleted list of what he had intended to put in each of the issues, and then basically told me that I could do whatever I wanted. So so long as I had Superman get to the geographic locations he needed to get to satisfy the terms of this contest.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, and got him back to something resembling status quo by the end. I could do pretty much whatever I wanted along the way. So when I would say like, oh, I'm going to have a bunch of super people from the future show up and take him off to their headquarters. They're like, okay, but, you know, make sure to have him run into Wonder Woman along the way. So, okay.
Yeah.
So I do 8 pages of that, and then, you know, Wonder Woman.
Okay, that makes...
Yep, put whatever you wanted.
It now makes sense for why it suddenly got a little more cosmic all of a sudden. And you know, it was... There was sort of a lot of things that... You know, and I found when people were saying, "Oh, yeah, all he's doing is walking," and it's like he's not. He's like there's all these other super dudes. He goes like through this little side thing, and they're all there. Yeah. I mean, there was so much more going on.
Yeah, that was me.
Very cool. Very cool.
Kent Shakespeare was one of the characters that was actually mentioned as he should be at the Fortress of Solidarity, but he wasn't one of the ones who talked. And so he didn't end up on panel. So anybody that had a speaking part ended up on panel, but the others kind of disappeared.
Yeah. So I mean that was like you say. I mean that's a pretty big deal though. You thought I might never get a chance to work on these characters, and you get to do the really ostensibly the goodbye issue for one of the big ones.
Which I didn't know. I knew they were by, I guess, March or April. So I'd already done more than half of my run. Mm-hmm. I found out that they were doing some sort of relaunch. Mm-hmm. But they didn't tell me any details. And in fact, I didn't know any details about the relaunch until everyone else did, when it went up on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
So I was working on the last issue, 714, when those press releases started going out.
Oh, okay.
I realized, well, this will be it for this version of Superman. I was already planning on... I think I was already planning on doing all this stuff. I did add in a couple of bits of dialogue. Mm-hmm. that weren't in my original draft, just to kind of put more of a bow on it. Yeah. But most of that stuff was there anyway, because I assumed it was going to be my, and it was, my farewell to Superman, because I would probably be able to write him again anyway. So,
Now, it was neat because it reminded me a little bit, certainly sort of the tone of the end, like that the narrative that you use reminded me very much of that DC Comics Presents annual with Superwoman.
Yeah.
And I mean, even because you had someone in that costume giving that, you know, I mean, it wasn't a hard leap to get to, but it just really had that sort of tone. And I mean, you know, again, that was Magan. I mean, and that's anytime you can channel Elliot S. Magan when writing a Superman story, probably not a bad thing.
I did it 10 times. So
yeah. So let's backtrack a bit and talk about, you know, because obviously you've written a lot of novels. In fact, this won't be your first foray into Star Trek, because there was some Star Trek novels that you've contributed to. I believe it was the Star Trek Myriad Universes.
Yep.
And how do you get from that side of things into the comic book side of things?
Well, I kind of ended up on that side of things because I couldn't break into the comic book side of things. When I was a kid, all I wanted to do was write comics. Mm-hmm. And that's all I wanted to do in high school. By the time I got to college, I realized that that would be a really hard job to get. And so in the meantime, I would work on prose. I would try to do novels and stuff. But my goal was still to break into comics. And so started writing novels in college. I think I'd written 7 before I really decided to try seriously to sell them anywhere, because the first 7 are no good. The whole time, though, I'm trying to break into comics. So anytime anyone has any kind of open submission, like Wildstorm, they started up, had an open submission policy, I would send in ideas and send in sample scripts. But it's difficult as it is to become a novelist, it's marginally easier than it is to break into comics. And so I managed to break into novels, I think, 4 or 5 years before I broke into comics. Mm-hmm. Something like that. And so by that point, you know, having written constantly over the course of, you know, 13 years or something, I was really fast. Mm-hmm. And so I ended up publishing 13 novels over the span of like 5 years. I wasn't making enough money. Novels don't pay that well. Mm-hmm. Most of them don't sell that well. They did okay, but not fantastic. And I really was getting to the point where I was going to have to go get a day job. I'd quit my day job when my daughter was born, and so spent a year as Mr. Mom, mm-hmm. 2 years as Mr. Mom, and then started working part time when she went to preschool. Was gonna have to go get a day job. Was basically gonna have to stop writing. I would do it for fun at night, and that'd be it. And Bill Willingham was a friend of mine, and he tried to get me in at DC and Vertigo for years without success. Just gave me an issue of his book, Jack of Fables. He called me up and he said, you know, you're doing a fill-in issue of Jack of Fables, and it's due in a month. Mm-hmm. And that coupled with the 13 novels I'd done was enough to make the difference on all the previous attempts. And so that led to me doing the first Cinderella miniseries, and that led to me doing the iZombie ongoing with Mike Allred, the same editor.
Yeah, we're gonna talk about that book too.
All this stuff. So yeah, so the secret to breaking into comics is try for 18 years and then know the right people.
Absolutely. So again, looking at themes that pop up in your work, now the Jack of Fables story was the one in issue 36, correct?
I have no idea. It's the one with the monkeys.
Yes, the one with the monkeys. Hey! Which right there, you've got Scott. You own Scott.
You can't
Scott
go
now.
Wrong with monkeys in the comic. I'm sorry, folks.
Yeah, exactly. So yes, Jack and Apes, and now you also own a company called Monkey Brain Books.
I do.
And you know, when I first put this together in doing research, it's like, I'm thinking, I know Monkey Brain books from somewhere. And then I'm sitting there and I'm looking at my bookcase, and right there I've got the Jess Nevins annotations for League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. It's like, that's where. You know, I just looked at the logo on the spine and it's like, that's where I've heard it before, of course.
That's us.
So now you've put out all of those volumes, and now I have to ask this, because I just picked up 1969 yesterday. Is there one coming up for that?
Well, you know, there's another part of Century still to come.
So he's going to do Century as a whole?
And by that point, I don't, because we're not so much in the business of publishing books at the moment, because the last few we you know, the kind of the bottom has fallen out of the print book market.
Mm-hmm.
We weren't losing a lot of money, but we weren't really making any.
Yeah.
And we just really can't afford to print a lot of books at the moment. So mm-hmm. we it's not dead, but sleeping.
Right.
Hopefully at some point it'll wake up again. But luckily, at least with that, you know, Century may not be done for another year or two.
It's taken 2 years for the second part to come out. So
yeah. So who knows?
At least. Yeah. Yeah. So
I'm sure if we don't do it, someone will, because Jess is too valuable an asset to all of us to not publish.
How did all that come about? How did it come about that you ended up publishing these annotations?
Well, that was me as a fan. Because, you know, I'm an every Wednesday guy, and I love more stuff, and so I discovered, I don't know if it was with the top 10 that made me discover Jess, or if it was some earlier annotations of his, mm-hmm. maybe Come or something. I can't quite recall.
Right.
But you know, I used to answer the phones at Dell Computers, and would spend all day looking at comic sites. And it's a whole longer story, but we learned how to run a publishing company doing books for Clockwork Storybook, which is a writers collective with Bill Willingham and Matt Sturgis and those guys. And my wife and I both had day jobs, and we didn't have a kid yet. We had a bunch of money we really didn't need. So we figured, what the hell, we'll publish books. And Jess was the first person we contacted. He knew me as one of the contributors for his annotations. So if you go back and look at old annotations, I'm one of the guys who said, oh, that's clearly the greatest American hero in the background.
Gotcha.
And I was like, hey, you know, has anybody contacted you about making a book of these? And he was like, no. And I said, well, I'll do it. You know, we'll give you some money. And a buddy of mine is an artist, and we'll do, you know, a cool thing. And we did. And the first one was the first title we did, the annotations to the first League of Extraordinary Gentlemen volume. And it sold extraordinarily well. My wife's behind me giving me numbers because I don't remember numbers, but it was 5,000 a month. We immediately went back for a second printing. Those sold really well.
Yeah.
And that was probably the worst thing that could have happened to us, because we thought, well, this is easy. Everything we publish is just going to sell.
Mm-hmm.
And that was not the case. Everything we published did not sell. But we published something like 2 dozen books, I think, over the course of the next few years. And it was fun.
Very cool. Yeah, those especially as you get into the later, even more heavy referential volumes, it becomes invaluable.
Oh yeah,
fantastic. So, what are some of the things we can expect let's cover this before we get into Why Zombie, because I got some stuff to ask about that as well. But you know, thinking again, you know, with the upcoming Legion, and because every now and then we got to bring it back to the Legion for
sure. Sure.
Just every now and then we bring it back to the Legion. You know, what are some of the things that we can expect to see here?
Well, we were a little bit limited in terms of main actors, in terms of. Mm-hmm. The main characters that could be involved in the present circumstances, because there's only 6 transporter pads in the main transporter room of a Constitution class starship. So 6 was the number of Enterprise crew members who would be caught up in this weird anomaly and end up in this alternate universe.
Right.
So I didn't want to, you know, unfairly weight the equation, and so there's 6 Legionnaires.
Mm-hmm.
But we will get glimpses you know, as they explain who they are of the other Legionnaires. But more to the point, you know, this is a both groups find themselves in an alternate universe that blends elements of both of theirs. Basically, something has happened in the past, you know, thousands upon thousands of years ago, that prevented both of their universes from coming into being. So, you know, assuming that they're all branching off from some main Earth at different points in their history, that there was a point at which those two universes shared a common history, and something happened that prevented that branch from happening. And instead, what we're in is a third universe that blends elements of both. So there, you know, the various cultures and alien species and, you know, geography and whatnot of the Star Trek universe is kind of overlaid and mapped onto the Legion universe. And so we'll have glimpses of, like, the war going on between the Klingons and the Kuns. You know, there's high-level negotiations between the controllers and the Organians that are breaking it down. Nice. There's also several circumstances where I realized it would make more sense not to just put different characters and concepts from the two different universes into collision, but to actually blend them so that in the first pages of the first issue, one of the characters that we meet is a Brainiac from the planet Vulcan, because they're both green-blooded races dedicated to logic. And my assumption is at some point in the distant past, in that there was some sort of cultural shift from Kalu to Vulcan, or one way or the other. You know, that there was migration the same way that the Romulans split off from the Vulcans, but that in this world that never happened, and they all stayed on the same planet. Also, the Borg have infected and uses their home base, the planet Tiraz. Which is also a cubicle, you know, cyborg planet.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's a lot of that kind of stuff.
Very cool.
So is Brainiac in it?
Brainiac is in it. He's not. So he's not on the regular cover. He's on the alternate cover for the first issue.
Good.
Yeah. They, you know, just the composition didn't work out. But no, he's definitely there.
Oh, very cool.
We were concerned.
So we, you know, happen, we will very. We'll very quickly see this kind of competition between Brainiac's ability to modulate the harmonics of his force field belt and Spock's ability to fiddle with the frequencies at which a phaser transmits.
And who wins? That's some serious ciphering. Yep. So let's talk a little bit about iZombie, because I think you have written the one and only horror comic that my wife will ever read. She read most of Sandman, although she seriously thought about giving it up when they were in the diner. But this one, you know, I showed this to her, and you know, she's already read the first couple of issues in the first trade, because it's, you know, it was, you know, yeah, it's she's a zombie, but look at the art, that was her way in. That was her way in, and it's such a terrific blend of, you know, this you know, postmodern take on how a lot of these characters work, and then you've got that retro side with Mike and Laura's art, and it just seems that. I mean, they were doing some great stuff in Atomic Comics, you know, just changing styles and really doing some adventurous things with the art. And it seems that they've continued that kind of experimentation here. How fun has that been to work on?
It's been ridiculous because, you know, once again, something that probably should be a prank. I was obsessed with Mike's work starting in about 1992.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm so, right, you know, with you on that.
Yeah.
Well, the notion that, you know, I get, you know, 20 pages of Mike Allred art in my email inbox once a month.
Yeah.
On average. It's not always once a month. but, you know, that's pretty darn cool. Yeah. And they have been really relentless in their experimentation. So, in fact, over the course of the first five issues, you can kind of see them working it out. Mm-hmm. By issue four, they figure out a process that they're using now. And that's why the art in the first three issues changes slightly, you know, in terms of just textures and tones and whatnot.
Yeah.
But by issue four onwards, they really have it down. It's been a ridiculous amount of fun because I can do, you know, basically whatever kind of story I like. And I'm lucky in that, you know, I think it's because Mike is one of my influences that I have. One of the first times we met in person, we just started working together via email and phone. And I was talking to him about, you know, he kept saying, you know, you're sending these scripts and it's exactly what I want to draw. You're sending things that are very much in, you know, in his wheelhouse and what he wants to do. And I said, well, I think that's because, you know, I've consumed you as an influence. And now, like a shark urinating through his skin, I'm just excreting my call red back out. And I meant it as a compliment. I don't think
it is Shark Week after all. So.
Yeah.
There you go.
Edutainment.
All right. I know Paul isn't as caught up with the book as I am because I'm completely caught up with it. But okay. I love the dead presidents, and I love Gramps.
So Gramps was the moment where I realized this was my book.
Mm-hmm.
The first five issues were the story that, you know, okay, what's the story that Vertigo's going to want to publish that I want to tell? And when I got to issue six, I was like, no, you know, this book belongs to me and Mike. What's the story we want to do? And then we'll see if Vertigo wants to publish it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the Talking Monkey came in.
What?
And, yeah.
And Scott's on board.
Dang.
Doesn't take a lot for you, does it, Scott?
I'm going to have to read this now.
A talking smoking monkey.
Oh, he's in. Yeah,
that puts me off then now.
What cigar?
Yes, it's cigars.
Cigars?
He drinks highballs and smokes cigars. But
all right, I might be able to give that a pass then. Cigars are pretty funny. You win this round, Roberson.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's just tonally. I mean, it's such an interesting book, and it's just interesting the way that you've taken on sort of the, you know, where you get into that explanation, where Amon is explaining to Gwen, you know, here's how it works. Here's, you know, you get the whole idea of the soul, and here's how all of these characters sort of work together, and what the differences are, And it was neat because the I guess it's the way that you'd framed it in the way Mike drew it. It reminded me a little bit of the old Books of Magic series.
I think there's probably a bit of that. I think one of the proximate influences for that walk across different time periods.
Yeah.
Is Timothy Hunter and Mr. E walking backwards through time?
Exactly. Yeah.
You're not wrong at all. The scene.
Oh, that was deliberate. Yeah, because you know sometimes you're never sure. You know, is this something that's just kind of like, it's sort of a subconscious memory, so that kind of comes up, or was it a conscious effort? And so you've kind of answered that there. I mean,
well, it's not a reference so much as it is me stealing that trick and doing the same thing. Yeah,
homage they call it.
It's just stealing.
Well, either way, it was incredibly effective, and just a really fun book, and you can see where it is that perfect blend because it's got that very Mike sensibility.
To bring it back to the Legion again, there is a Legion bit, though no one recognizes such, in iZombie number 6, in this kind of the secret life of Walter Mitty of. Spot the Weredog.
Yeah.
Wereterrier.
Yeah.
The moment where we see him as a superhero, everyone read it as X-Men. It's Legion. He's Timberwolf. Essentially.
Yeah.
Oh.
Of course he is, because where else did they get Wolverine from?
Yeah.
cough, cough.
Speaking of homage and stealing.
No, it's so just a really fun book, and again I wasn't as familiar with your name at the time that the first issue came out, although I started to put it together. It's like, wait, isn't that the Cinderella guy? And Another one that, that my wife really enjoyed. See, you you write comics my wife likes.
All right.
So that's kind of cool. That's kind of cool. how did the now obviously this Cinderella thing came about? You'd already mentioned that that you and Bill Willingham go way back. What was it that you know, he had kind of set that tone out in the very Steranko influenced issue of Fables, where it was this secret agent. What was it that just sort of pushed you into that Bond territory with it?
They were gonna pay me.
okay, yeah.
Well, I mean, no, I mean, so when I write the Cinderella books, it's really me doing my ritual impersonation of Bill writing his Cinderella character. So I studied very closely. There's, I think, two or three issues where we really see her in action.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe those three.
Yeah.
In the run of Fables.
Mm-hmm.
And so I studied those enough to kind of set that voice in my head and then, you know, kind of put Cinderella in very Bondian kind of plots.
Mm-hmm.
It made use of bits of fairy tale and fable that Bill hadn't really exploited yet.
Right.
And then when writing it, I just imagined Bill writing that character.
Mm.
it's just, so the first one was just, what's the cool thing you can do with Cinderella and who would be a cool nemesis for her.
Mm-hmm.
And the second one came as a result of my wife and I getting drunk one night and watching The Wiz.
Okay, hold on. The Wiz. Nice. W-I-Z.
Yeah.
Not what you do in a toilet, kids. Okay.
No. No. W-I-Z. Yeah.
I had to clarify that for some of our listeners, sir.
For the younger people.
Some of them a little younger, exactly.
So the all African-American cast musical version of The Wizard of Oz. And we're watching it, and I realized that throughout the course of that story, the original Wizard of Oz story, both in the bomb and the Judy Garland and the Wiz, that Dorothy kills witches and gets things for it.
Mm-hmm.
And in the first instance, it's by accident.
Mm-hmm.
The next time she does it, it's intentional. Somebody says, go kill this witch, and I'll give you what you want. And Dorothy does. And I realized that was a hit. That was she had taken an assignment to go assassinate somebody and was clearly very good at it.
Yeah, yeah.
So. Very good at making it look like an accident, too.
Exactly.
Right, I just happened to dump this bucket of water on her.
Who knew that would make her melt?
Oops, I dropped my house.
Oops.
Oops.
She's very good at that.
Hmm.
Very nice, very nice.
Now, friend of Dorothy, indeed.
Exactly, exactly. Now, so who was it that was holding Bill's feet to the fire on the whole Oz thing in San Diego? I can't remember who that was now. I don't know. Anyways, there was someone who was saying, you know, it's not just Oz. It's, you know, it's all these different lands and was being very specific about it. And now, of course, there's going to be more Oz stuff in the Fables universe. Are you going to be involved in that at all?
I'm doing more Cinderella in the Fables universe. Mm-hmm. I probably won't do much more Oz.
Hmm.
Because basically I got, Bill doesn't, if Bill might plan ahead, he doesn't tell anybody what his plans are.
Mm-hmm.
So when I started doing Dorothy, he didn't really have a lot of Oz plans.
Right.
But I work faster than he does. And so by the time the second issue of the second Cinderella miniseries had come out, Bill had decided he wanted to use Oz and had forgotten that I was using one of those characters.
Oh, okay.
And they'd already appeared on panel in a published comic. Mm. So I had to fix it for him. But no, the next thing I'm doing actually won't deal with any Fables characters we've seen. So I mean, it'll be Cinderella, but it won't be any Fables we've seen so far. You know, of course, unless Bill decides he wants to use him in the interim, in which case he will, which could happen.
Very cool. Very cool. So So obviously you're keeping busy with stuff. Is there anything else that you're looking into?
I think the only things you haven't mentioned are I'm doing I'm
the Boom still stuff.
Stuff. I'm doing Stanley Starborn, at least for one more issue.
Right.
And then I'm doing a 12 issue Elric miniseries.
Ooh.
Oh.
So now how did that come about?
The very short version of the story is that through misadventure, 13, 14 years ago, I met Mike Allred and became friends with him. I mean, Mike Moorcock and became friends with him.
Okay, yeah.
Oh, wow.
You know, he blurbed a couple of my books, and I published one of his nonfiction books through Monkey Brain, and he did some short stories for an anthology that I did. And when Boom found out I was friends with Moorcock, they got to Mike through me to see about doing a comic, and Mike was fine with it so long as I, you know, he didn't want to write it, but I could write it if I wanted to.
Yeah.
And so that's where Elric came from.
Hmm. Very nice. Now, and this is of course, again, you've done other Boom work. You've been working on their Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep adaptation.
Actually, I wrote the prequel to Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep. I didn't do the adaptation. So I did an 8-issue prequel to the novel.
That was the Dust to Dust.
Yeah.
Right. Now, I just saw that you were credited on issue 15 of the other series.
Oh, that might be because they did they ran an essay by me in one of them.
Okay. So what's I mean, again, and I know if I say what's your connection to this, and you'll say that they paid me, but you know, clearly between doing the sequel and writing the essay, there's some affinity here to this. Where does that come from?
Yeah, it's just I was probably for a while in my 20s,
mm-hmm.
I was very obsessive about Philip K. Dick.
Mm-hmm.
That's the right time for it, I think. And so I was like mid to late 20s for a few years. I read virtually everything, and some of it I reread. And I'd only read bits and pieces since then. So, like, in the last 10 years, I've read a few bits for pleasure. Like, I'd never read Man in the High Castle, so I went back to read that.
That's a good one.
But when I first got to know the guys at Boom, then managing editor, now editor-in-chief Matt Gagnon, contacted me and said, hey, we have this license to do this adaptation for Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep. It allows us the ability to do a prequel. Mm-hmm. Would you be interested in writing it? And I said, wow. Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And I think I had the synopsis back to them by later that day. But yeah, it was just kind of fun to do. They paid me. They didn't pay me much, but it was a fun job.
Yeah. Well, their adaptation of it, the full adaptation of the original book. It's an ambitious project. I mean, they're really going about it in a really interesting way.
Yeah. And so, you know, having read the book and then reread it,
mm-hmm.
Having their adaptation, I think they were up to, it's been going on for maybe a year or something at that point. Not quite that much.
Yeah.
But having it in front of me, like, did kind of spark interesting thoughts, like aspects I hadn't really considered. Like, I had not really made a connection between the androids and historical human slavery. I mean, clearly that's what they stood as a cipher for that. But I hadn't, like, made a dotted line connection between them to make it explicit. And in their comic adaptation of the novel, they very much make it explicit by having the androids you see in the advertisements look like slaves off a plantation. And the guy, like, giving the pitch looks like this kind of Colonel Sanders type. And that did kind of influence the way that I did the prequel.
Yeah.
And I kind of fell off the series a couple issues ago because for some reason my comic shop didn't get one of the issues, but Starborn, that that was one hell of a twist. I don't want to reveal it, but to those who haven't read it, but the identity of the guy's father.
Yeah, yeah.
Was it Hitler?
I'm not going to say anything.
Hitler's trained sex monkey?
I haven't read it, so I don't know. So.
There's no
Space Hitler.
Space Hitler.
Space Hitler. Space Hitler.
His dad is Space Hitler.
And Ultra Dillinger.
Ultra Dillinger.
I can only use one bullet at a time.
Well, so definitely. So here's the shopping list for everybody. First of all,
Amazon.com.
First of all, you got to hit up Here, There, and Everywhere. There's a Legion cameo, and we've already, Chris said, upped his sales for that book by two. Let's quadruple that at least. Come on, everyone, get onto Amazon. There is come October, we're going to have the Legion of Superheroes and Star Trek in crossover from IDW. Ongoing right now as we speak, iZombie. Okay, Cinderella just wrapped up, but there's more coming up, so everyone needs to stay tuned for that, and of course Elric coming up.
There's actually one more.
Hey,
there's a new ongoing with IDW called Memorial that starts in February.
Tell us a bit about that.
The elevator pitch is that it's Doctor Who meets Sandman by way of Miyazaki.
You win the internet. Jesus Murphy.
Wow.
With a talking cat.
I was going to say pig. Okay. Cat.
No, it's a cat. Okay. There's also an evil ventriloquist dummy.
Oh.
That counts.
Oh,
that is awesome.
I do not like evil ventriloquist dummies, I have to say. I'm with Zatanna on that one.
They're evil. They're bad guys.
They're though. Evil.
He's not cuddly. He's a bad guy.
Oh, yeah.
That sounds fantastic. And that's coming out IDW. And the title again is?
It's called Memorial. It's a creator-owned, ongoing. It's a series of miniseries like Lock and Key.
Oh,
so the first miniseries
sold.
Starts.
Sorry, the first series starts in February, and
yeah.
Very cool. Very cool. Who are you working with on that?
Rich Ellis. He's one of the Periscope Studio guys. Is the artist on the interiors. Mm-hmm. He's done a lot of work on like Marvel's All Ages stuff and a few other things. Did a lot of work with Paul Tobin. I can't say who the cover artist is, but it's somebody really, really cool.
Nice.
Is it Space Hitler?
It's not Space Hitler. Space Hitler's a bad guy. You wouldn't want him on your project. It's in the name, Hitler.
Hey, there's no bad press, sir.
I don't want any Hitler-related press. I'm good.
Exactly, exactly.
Any more, you mean?
Perhaps for the best. And I mean the, because that's good to hear that that's coming up. That'll basically fill my gap as Lock and Key speeds toward its end. And I tell you, IDW is the place to watch right now. I mean, as far as creator owned stuff, they're really knocking it out of the park. They're signing some great properties, and this sounds exciting. I mean, again, it's like Scott said, you've won.
Well, now I've got to just not screw it up, but thanks.
All right, and so there you have it. Again, hope you had a safe, happy Easter, Passover, whatever it is you celebrate around this time of year. And so we wrap this one up. Comments, as always, are welcome to Legion to Substitute Podcasters at gmail.com. You can join the conversation on our Facebook page, which can be found at facebook.legionofsubstitutepodcasters.com. In addition to that, we are on the Twitter. We are LOSP Podcast. And also you can head over to our website, legionofsubstitutepodcasters.com, and you can comment on this or any episode. And with that, we make our way back into the time bubble. We're going to head back to the 21st century, and we will see you all next week.